is good to be a gangster.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the next episode of Trailblazing Terror of Headlong into Monsters, the ADHD of Horror Movie Podcasts. I am Ragul, your elderly emo, coming at you from beautiful Tooele, Utah. In this part of the show, we take a second to spotlight upcoming creators of the horror genre, directors, writers, actors, and everyone in between. So, son of a bitch, I didn't change that one. Well, that's getting left in there. So make sure you're stocked up on supplies and try to keep your nose out of other people's business. And join us as we dive into monsters. This is episode 4. And today we're actually, I'm really excited for this one because we're talking to Patrick. And please help me if I mess up this name. Patrick Ray?
Yep. Ray. Nice work.
Nailed it. First try. Patrick Ray and Whitney. And again, if I mess this up, I'm so sorry. Whitney Wegman Wood.
Yep, you got all of the names.
Oh, freaking sweet, man. They are the writer, director, and a starring team of these of the short film, The Last Butterflies. Oh, I forgot to mention that this episode is brought to you by Horror Hound Film Festival. I was lucky enough to see this film there and talk to Whitney and Patrick. And I was running press. Thank you, Horror Hound, for giving me the opportunity. But yeah, I'm so thankful to have you guys on the show. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Yeah,
great.
Doing good. Busy day, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason I especially wanted to talk to you guys is because of your short. Patrick, you directed the short. Could you give us kind of a non-spoiler? And we won't get into spoilers, of course. I want people
sure,
to...
Sure, sure. I mean, I would best describe the movie as a survival film about a mom and daughter who are trying to survive. And it's a semi-post-apocalyptic world where there's been this ecological disaster. And the film is kind of going back and forth between present day and the past. So from an editing standpoint, that was challenging because we were going back and forth between... You know, what they were like, what life was like before this disaster happened and such. But yeah, so I would best describe it as a survival short film that has a little bit of horror to it, you know, and real life horror as opposed to supernatural horror.
I mean, it is definitely a horror. I felt very uneasy and like absolutely riddled with anxiety because some horror movies, you know, you're like, oh, what if an intruder breaks in? I don't know. What if there's ghosts? I mean, I don't really believe in like harmful ghosts. So like, I'm not whatever, fuck off. Right. But this is like circumstances that you absolutely have no control of as an individual. Now Whitney, you said in the Q&A panel that you had a lot, you're responsible for like the inception of this. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. I mean, yes, I'm responsible, but it definitely was like one of those, the muse moment, right? It came from somewhere else, not from me, because I literally dreamt this up while I was sleeping. I had a week's worth of really severe nightmares that jolted me awake at night. And once you wake up from something like that, like you're not going back to sleep anytime soon. So after about a week's worth of that, I'm like, all right, we're done with this. So I got up at 2 a.m. and cranked out the script at 2 a.m. just to get it out of my system, like everything, start to finish. And then I didn't do anything with it for a while. So this was late 2019. And then we had a pandemic, which, you know, just made it like even scarier. Cause I'm like, now the script is just real. And so in 2022, I finally decided to go ahead and turn it into a film and took a second draft at it. And what got added there was a lot of the news reports and the world building that happens at the beginning. And I actually consulted with some climatologists and earth scientists on that. So it's real-ish.
Yeah,
real-ish.
And it's... Uh-huh. And the thought of it is really freaking scary. But like, how did you two meet? If Patrick, if you weren't really involved in like the creating, like the writing process of it, like initially, how did you two meet?
That's actually, you know, Whitney, you go ahead. You can talk about that.
Oh, okay. So Patrick and I both lived in Kansas City at roughly the same time, but for whatever reason, we never crossed each other's paths at that point in our lives, even though we have copious amounts of, you know, friends in common. When we really did meet, I had already moved out to California, and I saw his short film that had Sarah McGuire in it in Horrible Imaginings Film Festival, because I was helping out with that film festival. And first off, I went, oh, I know that woman. That's Sarah. I went to undergrad with her. And then I watched the movie and I'm like, oh, that was really good. And so then I contacted pretty much everybody who was involved with the film just to say, hey, I really enjoyed your film. And after that, Patrick and I got to talking. We talked a lot on the internet and via text throughout the pandemic, you know, just about like favorite Stephen King books, favorite horror films, filmmaking in general, and just hit it off really well. So my executive producer for Butterflies is actually out of Kansas City, Sue Vickery. And when we decided that we were going to shoot in Kansas City, I contacted Patrick because he's in Kansas City and knows everybody.
And we put together our crew entirely out of the Kansas City area. So it was a lot of people who knew each other, and it was a really good team. We shot a lot of the film in Mountain City, Kansas, which is about, what, an hour 15 south of Kansas City, roughly?
Yeah.
And then a couple of days were shot inside of Kansas City. It was a six-day shoot total, and it was great. I mean, the cast was fantastic, and yeah, overall it was just a really great experience.
Yeah, I guess really 7 days if you count. We had a second unit that was out in California for the reporters and stuff. That was actually done in a new studio that's in Oceanside, California.
Right.
So. Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. So even the parts that are in Canada, they weren't shot in Canada.
That is Missouri, standing in for Canada, Missouri slash Kansas.
And we were filming in November, so it was very, very cold. So it definitely worked for replacing Canada in terms of, you know,
looking brutal and inhospitable.
I mean, it looked cold. It felt cold. I mean, there's not like a snowing blizzard and whatnot, but people walking in the woods, you know, it just felt cold to me. Maybe it was just me and I was getting really wrapped up.
It really was. I remember specifically the last day of filming, we were shooting a scene where it was Whitney and Ivy talking to each other in the sleeping bags and stargazing. That was like the final scene. And then we had like a bonfire, and I was right after we yelled rap for the entire film. I remember trying to walk back to the bonfire. My legs were so frozen. I didn't even think I was going to make it. I was like, somebody's going to have to drag me towards the heat.
I felt so bad for you guys, because at least Ivy and I were in like thermal sleeping bags, and we had each other's heat to like sit there and be like, oh, warm.
Yeah. it was brutal. But yeah, I mean, you know, there wasn't any snow. It was just that cold wind, you know, that pre-December cold wind.
And the funny thing about that was, up until literally the day before we started shooting, it was 70. And then it rained.
That's
and the next day
works.
When we started shooting.
That sounds tough. That actually sounds a lot like the weather we've had in Utah for a little bit this year. And it's been fun.
Yeah.
You know. Now, Whitney, you were talking about your nightmares and whatnot and writing this all down for some sort of catharsis. Did you find that cathartic experience through the writing it down and the filmmaking and kind of seeing this play out on the screen? Did you find the catharsis you're looking for?
Yeah, to a degree. So definitely the writing it down helped a lot. I was able to go to sleep after that. And then actually doing the final scene, like I remember, okay, I had this thought of like, okay, I'm going to experience this one more time, because when I wrote that last scene, I cried. When I read it to my mom for the first time, I cried. And then when we shot it, you know, it just was so on the surface. And I don't know, like doing it has definitely left me feeling a little more empowered. I know you started this discussing, you know, the idea that we as individuals can't do a whole lot about like ecological disaster, right? But I don't know that that's actually true. Like, we can each contribute in some small little way, however that is. If you're an artist, make art that impacts people. If you're a scientist, do science that impacts the environment. So I think doing this film has left me feeling a little more empowered in that regard, that you know, yes, there's a degree to which, like, you know, it is out of our control, but there are things that are in our control. And so we should take advantage of those, because if we all do it en masse, it's going to have an impact. So yeah, it's helped with my catharsis and feeling more in control. I'm going to say yes to that.
That was beautifully said, and honestly filled me with a lot of optimism. I appreciate those words.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I'm gonna say to the audience, to the listeners here, what I told you personally at Horror Hound, and that is that, like, three, 4 or 5 minutes into this movie, I was sobbing like a little bitch, and that stayed consistent for the rest of the runtime of this short. And we're not quite there yet, but I mean, when we talk, if we talk about the ending, I don't want to give anything away. I really want listeners to experience that for their own, if they get a chance to watch this. Will this be available somewhere where people can watch it en masse?
So
where
that
the general public can watch it?
That has not been determined yet. We're only about halfway through our film festival run. We started, first premiere was back in September. And so we'll probably run through September of 2024. I don't know if the short will ever be viewed en masse, because I'm currently in discussions to possibly expand it out into a short run episodic, in which case I don't know the legalities of, like, the original being out there, or if it matters. So I don't know.
Now, when you say short run episodic, are you talking about like a little Netflix miniseries, or?
Yeah, like a 10 episode miniseries.
That sounds freaking rad. Patrick, are you going to be part of this?
I hope so.
100% Patrick will be a part of it. We just have to.
Oh, good.
We have to get through some pitch meetings first and make sure that it's always happening.
An uphill battle. But
yeah,
I think that you know, it's refreshing to tell a story like this that doesn't involve zombies. or yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's more down to earth. It's actually more frightening that way. And so that's what appealed to me about the script, was this is a post-apocalyptic world that doesn't involve anything supernatural or anything like a virus. Even though you did come up with it in 2019, which was, you know, very, very close to 2020. But so that's one thing. And obviously I'm a parent. I have 2 daughters. So the mother-daughter relationship, the father-daughter relationship, was something that definitely spoke to me as a director. So,
well, I would be 100% on board seeing where this story goes throughout, like, a 10 episode run, because, you know, like you guys said, it doesn't involve zombies. And I mean, I've seen some zombie stuff recently. I don't think it's overly played out or incredibly overly saturated, but I mean, for the most part, if I see zombies, I'm like, again, you know, whatever.
Right.
But I mean, it can be done right still. But the fact that it is just natural disasters, there's no paranormal, no supernatural, no viral, anything like that, is really cool, because it makes this so grounded in reality, and it would just be, you know, character world building. And I absolutely love that. I think this story, this world that you guys created, would really, really lend itself to, you know, something episodic, and as opposed to, you know, an hour, 30 hour, 40 minute movie. So I would love to see that.
I hope it gets made. I love that you say that, because I can take that to the money people and be like, look, we have an audience.
Oh, 100%. And not to take anything away from, like, things like the Last of Us, I'd say it was, you know, the last really good post-apocalyptic episodic thing going on right now. But again, you know, zombies. But this, I mean, my gosh, it's so dang cool. Plus the fact that it's not quite post-apocalyptic, it's in the process of everything collapsing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
that ugly process before everything gets turns into Mad Max world at that point. It's almost like that lead up.
Right. And I think what's really nice about that, like, being, you get really great character arcs, because people are in that gray zone of, you know, we still want to believe in our better angels, that we're going to do the right thing, but everything's getting tight. You know, we're scrounging for food and water. and maybe we're not as good of people as we had hoped we would be. And so it's a lot to play with as both a writer and an actor looking at each of the character tracks. And that's why I like the idea of an episodic, because in the short, we meet a lot of characters that we don't really get to delve into who they are and why they got to that point. And they all have their own stories too. So I want to really share all of those.
Awesome. I mean, I have a lot of questions about those characters, but right now, Patrick, I got a question for you specifically. Okay. What was the most challenging aspect in directing this story? What was the biggest hurdle you had to overcome?
That's a tough question. I mean, obviously there are little hurdles here and there. Every film project poses its own set of challenges. I mean, obviously we were filming this during the pandemic when we had to follow SAG the COVID rules and such. So that scene where we have all the people waiting in line for water, obviously everybody had to take COVID tests twice before they were allowed to be on set.
And then once while on set as well.
Yeah, exactly. So those are the kind of things that, you know, add an extra layer of, cause I mean, and I explained this, sometimes you can ask for 100 extras and only 20 show up. So we were very, very lucky that we ended up having like 30 or 40 people show up, but then you have to make sure that they're, you know, COVID free at that point. But, so yeah, I mean, obviously the weather poses a challenge no matter what. Those are the things you can't really control. I always tell people, before they make a film, come in as prepared as possible so that when something unseen happens or the weather or an actor gets sick, that you can pivot and face those challenges. So, I mean, fortunate enough, we had a really great crew. We were very efficient. The actors were right on the money. Everybody just came very prepared. So overall, I would say it was a fairly smooth operation.
And what would you say your biggest reward, the most gratifying thing from this filmmaking experience was?
For me, it's what we're doing right now, hearing from people who saw the film and were affected by it. You know, seeing it play to an audience and having people come up to you afterwards and saying that really affected me emotionally. I think that for me is because I mean, I edited the film too. And Whitney and I we've been so immersed in it that at the end of the day, we kind of lose objectivity. And so we need to have that audience response to tell us what we've created in some ways. So, you know, really when you came up to me that day at Horror Hound, that's a reward for me.
I will agree with that sentiment. That's awesome.
You didn't kick me in the face, or, you know, so that was good.
Well, what I wanted to ask you both was how dare you, because like making me feel like, you know, what I felt and crying, I wanted to have my son there so I could hold him and hug him and tell him I love him and whatnot, but of course he was at home and I was, man, it was a visceral emotional reaction that I had to your film. So thank you for that. I really hope that listeners get a chance to watch this or what comes out of it. Now, if you guys can't make an episodic venture of this story, is there any plans to continue it in some other way?
I mean, there's no plans yet, but I definitely think, by the nature of it and based on the response that we've been getting, that something more should happen with this. Trying to get it out to a wider audience, either in its current form or as a feature, whatever it ends up being.
I mean, I'll take whatever I can get, because I want to know more about this universe and these characters. This, I mean, my gosh, it was, yeah.
Well, and I want to say, I mean, I appreciate so much that you're having this response, and I really appreciate that Horror Hound screened this, because, you know, as Patrick said, it's not your traditional horror movie. It's like, you know, a cousin to it in the sci-fi sort of survivalist sense. And, but it is like, it's all of the feelings that we feel from that, right? The deep sadness and the anxiety, it comes from a fear of like, this could happen. This is very likely to happen. And how will we deal with it? And so, yeah, I appreciate that Horror Hound could see the scary in this moment, in this very dramatic piece.
Yeah, and it was scary, I'll tell you. Well, question for both of you. How did it feel just being at Horror Hound? Like, what was the general vibe? How was it?
This was my fourth time attending. I've screened some of my short films. In fact, 2 years ago, my feature film that I directed, They Wait in the Dark, screened there as well. So I again, it's gotten so much bigger every time I've attended. And it's always a blast just being around that many fans and filmmakers and such and meeting new people. So I'm going to keep coming back as long as I keep making movies. So,
well, hell yeah, homie, I'm going to keep coming back as long as they have me covering the press. So we'll probably run into each other and hopefully we get more chances to talk and hang out. We should do karaoke together one night.
I don't know if anyone wants to hear me do karaoke. I think that's a horror movie unto itself.
I mean, it is called Scaryoke.
I mean,
that's true.
If I get enough liquor in me, I'll definitely do it.
I don't drink. I have to do that noise sober.
Man.
But well,
so for me, this was actually my first Horror Hound. I'd never gone before. I mean, yeah.
How did you like it?
It was great. I had no idea that it was going to be as big as it was. I loved seeing all the people coming in costume. Like, that was amazing. It was definitely on par with, like, going to Comic-Con or WonderCon. But, you know, obviously, like, genre-specific. I wanted to buy so many things at the vendor booths. I controlled myself. I bought this really beautiful bat necklace that was made by a company out of England. So... I controlled my spending habits, but yeah, so much cool stuff there. Loved getting to see so many of the films. You know, I laughed, I cried, I screamed, all of the things.
Yeah. A lot of the films were like a crazy ride. Honestly though, this one, so a fellow podcaster and a good friend of mine, was talking to me and he asked me, what was your favorite short? And no hesitation, I was like, oh, The Last Butterflies for sure. That was that was my favorite short. It's the one that I am still thinking about. And there's some other really good ones that I hope to talk to those filmmakers about also. But I think it's the lasting effect of this movie that really has me, really has an effect on me. I have another question for both of you. They say children and animals are the hardest people to work with when making a movie. How was it working with Ivy? She has a pretty major role in it. And she's the little girl of the mother daughter, duo. How was it working with Ivy?
Well, from a directing standpoint, she was super easy. I mean, I've lucked out. I've directed films with both kids and animals. Luckily I've had good luck in casting the right actors for it. So, I think she was fantastic and just easy to work with, easy to direct. And, it's one of those things where you see it and you're just shocked almost. Cause you're like, at that age, I couldn't have done that, you know? I walked away really impressed with her. So.
Yeah. Ivy is incredibly impressive. One, she was five whenever we shot. Yeah. Two, this was her first narrative that she'd ever done. She'd done a Hallmark commercial before that. That's it. So the second thing that she'd ever acted in. And three, she came in knowing her lines like better than Cooper and I knew ours. It was so impressive.
Wow.
So my favorite Ivy story, as far as like this little girl being a consummate professional. One of the days that we were doing a lot of the walking in the woods scenes, she pulls me over and she goes, Miss Whitney. I'm going to put this stick right here so we come to the exact same spot every time. And I look at her and I'm like, Ivy, you know what you're talking about? That's continuity. And even some grown-up actors aren't good at continuity. And she's like, oh, okay, cool. And then she goes up to Miss Andy, our scripty, and she goes, Miss Andy, when I said this line, was I at that tree or that rock? And so Andy like goes back through the footage, lets her know. But she was just being so professional and asking these questions that, you know, a professional actor should ask, you know, about continuity and delivery and things. And then, I don't know, like 2 or 3 days later, she did something else that was along the lines of, continuity checks. And she stops midway and she looks at me and she goes, Miss Whitney, what am I doing? And I said, continuity. And she's like, continuity. She was so excited about it, which is delightful. So I hope she continues on as an actor. She's great.
I mean, well, it sounds like if she wants to, she's going to be pretty far ahead as far as like her professionalism goes. So that it'd be really cool to see where her career goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and she's already gotten a couple nominations for like best child actor at some of the film festivals we've gone to. Like, she's excellent. She was great to work with.
Now, Whitney, as far as your co-star, Cooper, he's your husband in this film. How did your guys' relationship go on screen and off screen? How was that working together?
Well, so Coop and I have known each other for a really long time. I used to live in Atlanta for a couple years. That's where I got most of my film TV credits. And I met Cooper doing a 48-hour film project. He was our boom mic op. And that's what I knew him as for many, many years. I don't know how many people know this, but he actually is part of IATSE. He's in the union on the crew side, as well as being a SAG actor. And he and I, you know, we fell out of contact and then would get back into contact throughout the years. But we had never had an opportunity to actually act opposite each other. So this was our first time acting with each other, even though we've been friends for a really long time. And it was easy. It's so, I mean, you feed off Coop. Like, he just brings his natural personality to the roles. And
he brought a lot of enthusiasm to the set, which was good. Because, yeah. I mean, he was always happy and always joking around. And I mean, despite the tone of the film, we were having a lot of fun making this movie. So, you know, he definitely was, brought a lot of levity to the set.
Yeah. Which was necessary for sure.
Yeah. Very necessary.
Oh yeah. Because this movie is, woo, it's a ride. Yeah. Now, I want to get into some fun questions here. Some questions that maybe aren't directly related to this movie. Question for Patrick real quick. If you had an opportunity where someone said, here's $50 million. I just want you to remake any movie of your choice. What movie would you decide to remake?
Well, you know, I would take the $50 million and remake three movies. How about that?
Perfect. What are those three?
Yeah. You know, I've always wanted to remake The Stuff, the Larry Cohen film, which is like one of my, because it's such a great concept that I think is still pertinent to today's society, you know, and mm-hmm. anyone who doesn't know what the movie's about, it's about this ice cream dessert that people get addicted to called The Stuff. And, You buy it in the store like it's yogurt or something like that, but it's actually coming out of the ground and it takes over your mind. And so I think it's definitely a fun one. And then part of me wants to make a Critters movie someday, you know?
Like, oh my gosh. My language.
Yeah. And then, I'd have to think about the third one. I know that like those are two remakes I would like to make at some point. I'm sure there's a third one in there somewhere, but I don't think $50 million would actually work for either one of those movies. It'd have to be 10, 15 at the most.
That's true. Otherwise, you're not getting your return, probably.
No, probably not. No.
So, Whitney, similar question to you, except in the acting side. If you could act in any movie, if in any remake of a movie, what remake of a movie would you like to act in?
Oh my gosh. In a remake?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, I have this weird relationship to remakes. I mostly don't like them, but there's a few. I mean, I love the new remake of Dune. I'm like heavy sci-fi fantasy kid, so if I could be in the Dune universe, that'd be really cool.
That'd be cool.
Gosh. Well, it's not a movie, but if they ever properly redo Game of Thrones, since the final season was such a disaster, I'd like to be in that. And... Ooh! Something from the Aliens franchise.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. Now, would you straight be Ripley, like a Ripley character?
Oh no, that would be far too intimidating, man. Like Gordon Weaver killed it. I don't think he'd ever do that. Some other variation off there. So I'd even be okay if I got killed right away. Like I'd just to be able to say that I was in Aliens.
Yeah, like how many people can say like I was killed by a xenomorph? That's so cool.
There you go. A handful can say that.
Yeah. I mean, but like out of all the people alive, even all the people in the filmmaking industry.
Yeah. Or you could be like Bill Paxton and be killed by Terminator, Predator, and the aliens.
That's right. Bill Paxton and oh my gosh, who's the actor in
Sean Bean who always gets killed?
Oh man, listeners are screaming at me right now. I have to check. He also starred in Pumpkinhead. Lance Hendrickson,
yes.
Was also killed by the trifecta, the Terminator, the Predator.
Yeah, he was. You're right.
That's right. I think they're the only two that can say that, which is really cool. Solid picks, man. Now, to both of you, what are your favorite horror movies? You guys said you talked about it amongst yourselves, but let's let the listeners know. Favorite horror movies.
You know, I'm frustrating because I like all different kinds. I went and saw Late Night with the Devil last night, which was fantastic. It's funny enough, my favorite subgenre of horror is the slasher genre. And it's funny because I've never made a slasher movie and I've always wanted to, but it's coming up with a fresh approach that's very, very challenging because everything it's been done over and over and over again. There's a formula. Mm-hmm. So it's always trying to find a way to subvert that formula, and I think that's challenging. But I grew up, I was a little kid in the 80s, and I was told not to watch, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th and Halloween, and so immediately my interest went to those movies because I was told not to watch them. So it backfired, and so I've always been I think Friday the 13th, the series, the franchise is probably my favorite.
All right. And for me, so the last time this came up in conversation, not that long ago, I was given the challenge on social media to do my top 15, which the list that I came up with was more like 50. And then I had to narrow it down to top 15. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to throw out some of these titles because I found where I posted that on my page. So I have Nosferatu, Candyman, Cabin in the Woods, House on Haunted Hill, Dagon, 28 Days Later, Descent, Nightmare on Elm Street, Cat's Eye, Ginger Snaps, and then one of my... Oh, and Aliens is in there too. It's going by really fast. and then one that I feel like I have to mention is Patrick Ray's movie They Wait in the Dark made my top 15 because I think the writing is fantastic.
I already made a note of that. The second you mentioned that movie, that it's a feature, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Can I find that anywhere?
It's on Tubi and Crackle, and it's on Redbox and Vudu. And just if you type it in, do you have a Roku TV?
I do.
You can just type it in, and it'll show you all the places that it's at. So
awesome! Well, I can't wait to watch it.
It's a slow burn supernatural film that was shot entirely in Kansas, and I don't want to tell you too much about it. You'll just have to watch it.
Fair enough. I like to go into movies as blind as possible. I feel that heightens my enjoyment of the movie. So, yeah, I'll just, knowing that you're attached to it, I'm already going to go watch it this week.
Cool.
You won't be disappointed. It's a very good movie.
I mean, well, with Patrick's directing, it has to be.
Well, and you wrote it too, right, Patrick?
That's right. I wrote it. I wrote it specifically for the lead actress, Sarah McGuire, who actually is... Sarah McGuire is the reason why Whitney and I met, because Sarah was the star of the short film that Whitney saw, and Sarah and Whitney went to undergrad together in Kansas City. So But yeah, Sarah has been in the lead in my last couple projects. So
yeah.
So awesome.
Full circle connections.
Yes.
Sweet. Last question I have, what's next for both of you? I mean, Patrick, do you have anything in the works right now that we should be on the lookout for?
I am in the process right now of filming a feature film called Super Happy Fun Clown. And it is based on a short film that actually, I don't know if you've been to the Nightmares Film Festival. It's screened there in Columbus, Ohio, and it's playing at Panic Fest next, the short film. But we've been shooting the feature, and so we have 4 more days of filming on that. And then I directed a found footage horror movie that is going through the final stages of post-production. So hopefully both of those, they're both feature length. Hopefully both of those are done by the end of the year and I can put them out to the world. So
awesome. Well, whenever those two come out, please let me know and I'll help you promote them. If you want to come back on here and have an interview, a second interview, we can talk about those movies. Sure. I'd absolutely love to have that conversation with you. And if not, I'll still, you know, advertise it on all of my social media platforms and hopefully get the word out.
Sounds good.
Whitney, what do you have going?
Yeah, so as for me, I recently signed on as producer and lead villain for the feature film Sojourn, which was written by Christopher Murray, and we are in the process of doing some pitching, so we'll see where that goes next. And this film it's a horror film, it's a historical horror film, and I would say if I was going to give, it's somewhere between Jordan Peele-esque style and Quentin Tarantino, because there's a little revisionist history aspects to it.
And is it historical fiction? Like, does it take place in and around historical events?
Correct.
Oh man, I love that stuff. I know people don't like movies like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, but the simple fact that it's historical fiction to me makes me love it even more.
Yeah, historical fiction horror film. So. Hits all your buttons.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, I think that we're going to wrap it up here. But before we go, do you guys have any plugs that you want to throw out there for the listeners can follow you and your endeavors?
Whitney, you can list off all the upcoming festivals for the film. How about that?
Sure, absolutely. So coming up next, we have Kansas City Film Festival International. After that, we have been accepted to one in Georgia, but I don't have the screening information yet, so I'm not going to go a whole lot into that. Just know, Georgia, we're coming for you. Then we have one in Toronto and Bratislava, Slovakia. I think that covers everything so far, but many more in the works because, like I said, we still have a festival run pretty much all the way until like the end of September or beginning of October. And as far as how to follow us and find out when we're screening at various festivals, you can find us on all social media at The Last Butterflies or at The Last Butterflies Film. Also, there's www.thelastbutterflies.com.
Awesome. And I will have The Last Butterflies social media stuff linked in the show notes. For listeners can go there and just click the link and follow you guys and follow the movie. But guys, thank you so much for talking with me and
thank you
and for making this movie because I absolutely loved it.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you have anything else before we sign off here?
I like all the stuff in the background right now on your video. Sorry. It looks like the other side of my room that you can't see, by the way.
So you have to describe it because the audience is not going to.
That's right. I forget. Yeah. Lots of horror collectibles. How about that?
Yeah. Last year, and listeners know, I recently renovated this room in my basement to be a studio and whatnot, and I filled it with a lot of my horror collectibles and horror stuff. I need to put up the stuff that I got this year at Horror Hound. I haven't done that yet, but this poster right here is from a movie that screened the first year I covered the Horror Hound.
I liked that film. I thought the director was going to be there this weekend. What's his name? I can't remember.
Oh my gosh, I can't remember either. He's a great dude. In fact, I interviewed him here. For Trailblazing Terror here. And I feel really bad because I can't remember his name.
This is when you cut this part out and just insert like you knew it right off the top.
I know, because now I feel.
No, yeah, I mean, I wish, but John Iceberg.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. I definitely have kept in touch with him and kind of gave him some pointers on distribution and such. And I think he's shooting a sequel. So
I hope so. Yeah. When I talked to him last, he said this was actually started as like part of a 3-movie trilogy. Yeah. And I hope we can see the continuation of that story, much like I hope we can continue the continuation of The Last Butterflies. Oh, Rook, we didn't even talk about the ending, but I mean, I don't want to talk about the ending, but I will say, were there teary eyes during the filming of the ending?
Yeah. Our DP like could barely keep the camera straight because she was sitting there crying.
I think my tear ducts were frozen at that point, but yeah. Nice. You know, when you're directing, obviously it's a little trickier because you're thinking about all the moving parts and you're thinking about all the angles and everything that needs to happen to get the scene shot. And so I didn't cry, but internally I was crying.
I think I made Vic cry. I think, yeah. I got Vic. So
he was our first AD. So yeah.
Normally in scenes like that, I am, and listeners know, I'm like, yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. But in this one, in such a short amount of time, I felt so connected to these characters and invested in their plight that when it happened, I was like, oh God, no, no.
Good. That's what we hoped for.
That means we were successful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. It affected the hell out of me. We're going to sign off with that. As always, you can follow the podcast on Into Monsters on Twitter. That's in the number 2 Monsters. You can follow me personally on Twitter at Raul versus Monsters. My letterbox at Into_Monsters. Visit our website at headlongandmonsters.com and send us an email with some listener feedback at headlongandmonsters@gmail.com. And that's going to be our episode for today. Next time, I'm not quite sure who we're interviewing next, but we also do have some exclusive episodes that Greg and I are going to release over at Sights and Sounds with some other filmmakers we met at the con. So be sure to be on the lookout for those and join us next time as we once again dive headlong into monsters. Bye.